ಹೇಳಿದ್ರು.
Welcome and good evening. It's a pleasure to be able to welcome everyone to this joint shiur which is taking place this evening, hosted by both the Eastside Torah Center and Bialystok Shul. I want to first start thank the sponsors who are responsible for helping to finance tonight's program, the Rathfogel family. Reb, thank you. Rabbi Chaim Finkelstein and family, Lehilim Nishmas, their late father, Reb Sender Zev, and Reb Moshe HaKohen, Olav HaShalom, Shomer should have an Aliyah, and the Losi family in particular, Mr. Avi Losi, who's sponsoring Lehilim Nishmas' mother, Mrs. Rivka Losi, Rivka Bas Moshe, Olav HaShalom, and Shomer should have an Aliyah. Hopefully the inspiration that will come from tonight's program, getting us in the mood for the onset of Rosh Hashanah, the Atheres Yemei Shuvah, should provide an Aliyah Neshama to all of those for whom the program is sponsored. I'm very excited personally for tonight's program, because it's an opportunity for me to hear an individual who's been involved in Rabbonus and Chinuch as a prolific writer for many, many years on the Jewish scene here in America. Rav Yaakov Feinman Shlita is, first of all, a Talmud of Rav Luther's Eretz Yisrael, a Talmud of Chaim Berlin. Currently serves as the Rav of Kehillas Beis Yehuda Tzvi in Cedarhurst, and has served as the founding manal of a number of different yeshivas, yeshivas of Yaakov Yosef in Staten Island, and has been involved in Chinuch Avodah Ba'avonos for over four decades. He's written widely in various different publications on Hashkafa, the Churban, Halacha, and biographies of Gedolim, as well as lecturing all over the United States, Canada, and Eretz Yisrael. He currently writes a popular regular column for Mishpacha magazine entitled Blueprints, which provides a Torah perspective upon the modern world. Rabbi Feinman tonight is going to bridge two different topics, and we're looking forward to him doing so masterfully. First of all, as we all know, the Torah world suffered a tremendous loss this past summer with the loss of Harav Hagaon of Yosef Shalom Alyosha, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, whose Sokim and Horah were a figure on the scene of world Jewry for decades. Individual Zocha to have tremendous Arichus Yomim, and not just Arichus Yomim in terms of longevity, but Arichus Yomim in terms of quality, being able to render Piskei Halacha Mamish almost up to the very, very end, and to be a source of inspiration with his Hasmada and his ability to address the issues of the day for literally decades. So Feinman will deliver the Rehesped on Rav Yosef, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. At the same time, given the particular time of year, the few days that we have left till Rosh Hashanah, it's going to be inspiring us with the Bris Chizuk for Rosh Hashanah, for the Aseres Yemei Teshuvah, and the period leading up to Yom Kippur. It's a tremendous pleasure, a kavod, and what we anticipate will be a tainuk to be able to call upon Rav Feinman to deliver the Bris Chizuk.
Shus, the Mardasa Shlita, I thank him for that very effusive introduction. Rabbi Packer Shlita, the Rabbanim, that probably should be speaking tonight, and I should be listening. But it's a very, very special kavod to be here. I haven't been here in a number of years. Last time I spoke was upstairs on Shalom Bayis. I hope I didn't ruin anybody's Shalom Bayis when I was here. But I felt very inspired by the beauty of the shul and the warmth of the reception that I got. Tonight, it's a little bit different. As Rob mentioned, I'm trying to bridge two not so different subjects. Words about Rav Yashiv, we'll talk about in a minute if it's a hesped or not, and about Rosh Hashanah, are not that far apart automatically, because Rabbi Yashub was, among other things, the Amud HaYira of Klal Yisrael. The Pachet Chagim that all of us felt, and I'll be honest with you, I put on my big day Shabbos tonight, because, first of all, I should do it, Lechvayt the Rabbanim, Lechvayt the Bialas Dr. Shul, Lechvayt the East Side, and the Gedolim Yisrael that lived and lived here. But on another level, it was my Rebbetzin that gave me the mussar a little bit that I should put on the kapata and the uphat, because we had the minig whenever I visited Rebbe Yashiv for about 35 or 40 years, I would put on my big day shabbos. The halacha of visiting the gadol, visiting the tzaddik, chayav adam la'akol p'nei rabbi b'regel. But even besides the visiting the gadol on a yom tov, just going and being in the environs and the daladamas of a tzaddik of the gadol, the yom tov, you know, for me especially, was a great experience every single time. I'll tell you a little bit about it later on in the presentation. So, how do I come to Rabbi Yashiv? Why, I'm not going to use the word hesped. First of all, Rabbi Yashiv himself didn't like hesped, and at his levayim there were no real hesped. My own Rebbe, the other time was Rabbi Rabbutner, the Mardasim, was kind enough to mention that I was a Talmud. Although, my Rosh Hashiva once said to me, okay, I'm your Rebbe, who says you're a Talmud? So, you know, that was already, you know, right away a little bit worrisome. You know, so I can't say that I'm a Talmud, and I can't say that this is a Hesed, so what are we doing here? And I'm going to share some anecdotes, really, that's all I'm going to do, is some feelings, some stories, some of which I was present at, some of which I had the great success of being a part of. So I've already written about Rabbi Yashiv several times, by request, some magazines, Mishpacha asked me to write, and others. And I've spoken in the five towns, around the Shloshim. I had the great zechus of speaking on a panel with my good friends with David Weinberger and Rev Ginsburg and Rev Moshe Tovia Leaf. And we each tried and approached the subject of Rabbi Yashiv and came out with different visions, because he was such a diamond that when you look at Rabbi Yashiv, everybody saw something else, although everybody saw, as the Maharadasar mentioned, his Hatzmada, which we're going to talk about a lot tonight. And for the ladies, if you don't mind, I'm going to try to find something in Rabbi Yashiv that was for all of us, because I'll just speak for myself. We're so rachik, I'm so rachik from what Rabbi Yashiv was, that it's almost hard, maybe even impossible, to try to draw a line and say, okay, I'll try to be like Rabbi Yashiv. Who could be like Rabbi Yashiv? Who can even attempt the connection? So, I'm just going to begin with a little bit of what that connection is, and then we'll try to fit it into Rosh Hashanah and the Yom Neroim as well. The Gemara says that everybody should always say, Masa Yahiu Masai and Masa Boisai. First, you should always say, when will my actions reach the actions of our mothers, of the forefathers, and by extension, all the other early giants that we try to touch. So one of the Chassidish Rebbes, I believe, the Sfasebe said it over the name of his grandfather, the Chedush Rebbe, so it's a very gerund verb, that he said, Masa Yakil doesn't mean that you can try to be like them. It's impossible. And the Ris Rav, to flip over for a minute to the Litvax, the Ris Rav once heard, and it was actually Rav Shas, that's how they told it over, and in his humility he said that he made the mistake. Rav Shas was once about to say that somebody from their generation was the equal or maybe even greater of somebody from the Friedrich, from the earlier generation. And the Ris Rav corrected him. Ris Rav said, Tenish side, it's impossible. Can't be. Because each generation's gedolim are automatically so far beyond us. The generation itself is so far beyond us that you can't even make those comparisons. So what does Masa Yagiu mean? So the Svatsana said, over the name of the Chedush Rebbe, as Medat Armiru, you have to just touch it. it's like you're touching the phrase that's used in all the sages form is galima, the garment, touch the bottom of his garment. So that's really what we're going to try to do tonight, is to just touch very, very feebly and very in a very limited way what the Eliashiv was and what we can learn from it. And that's even for the ladies. It's not just for those of us who are trying to be Masmidim, or trying to be Tamir Chachamim, or trying to be able to pass in a Shalom. It goes much deeper. Now let's just start off with today's daf. Those of us that learned the daf already, and I hope that many of the men have learned daf Yomi, especially learned today's daf. So when Rav was Nifter, Rav passed away. So when they were coming back from the Leviathan, so they had a shayla about something to do with benching. I'm not going to go into all the details, but they didn't know the answer. The Gemara discusses this at the bottom of the bottom of today's daf. And one of the Amorayim turned around the garment that he had already cut, he had already torn it, kriya, for his Rebbe. You have a chiyuv to tear kriya for your Rebbe. And the Rav Chaim Kanievsky, Rav Eliashiv's Hagen's Lagzun, Shtarzan, Rabbi Mechaim Lechaim, where Rav Eliashiv was lifter, told everybody to tear kriya, because he was the Dor Lador, the Paisik Hador. So when Rav was lifter, and they realized what they had lost, so they tore kriya again, and had a shayla, seemed like a relatively simple shayla, about benching, a day, an everyday event, and they didn't know. The Gevalim didn't know, the Amorayim didn't know. So they tore kriya again. So I was reminded that when Reb Moshe Zecher Tzadik Livracha, of course, here is the place to talk about Reb Moshe, and Mardasha tells me that Reb Feinstein is on his inside, the Adam from the Shul, that Reb Moshe, right after he was lifter, came the famous shayla, the older people here will remember for sure, it was a famous shayla about wine vinegar. All of a sudden, there was a problem with the wine vinegar in Klal Yisrael. And everybody found out, to their dismay, that this wine vinegar, and a lot of stuff that we didn't even think about, it's in ketchups and in mustards and all sorts of stuff. And there was a shayla of wine vinegar in Klal Yisrael. And they of course, erupted a big machlokes about the wine vinegar. And right away, everybody said, "Oy gevalt, if Reb Moshe was only here, we wouldn't have a problem with wine vinegar. We would know right away the answer." And that's what we get out of today's daf about Reb Eliashiv as well. When Reb Eliashiv was alive, there was clarity. And one of the chazal that I wanted to mention about Reb Eliashiv tonight, before we get into the stories and the anecdotes, is that chazal say, what's the top of chacha? So, kol shishayel or b'chol b'chol b'chol, you can ask the mishayla any place that he answers. So all the first say, well, he answers. I mean, obviously, that's the point. He knows it. The Jews say he knows the answer. So, no, he answers. He's not afraid to answer. He's not shy about answering. And he has the places, he has the broad shoulders to be able to pass through. And he does pass through. Now, this is not fast for Chalila to denigrate anybody. There are many, many great Gedolim that didn't want to pass the Shabbos. They were Rosh Hashivas, they gave a shir, they were Tamir Chachodim that ran away, Yirei HaHayroah, it's called people that are afraid to pass the Shabbos. The Klal Yisrael needs Paiskim, needs Mayur HaHayroah. And a person that takes upon himself not only to know something, but to actually Paiskim, the Oyver, he says it, that's a tremendous Madrega. So that was one of the things that we respect, that we revere Reb Eliashiv and his memory for, is that he was willing to pass him. I did a little study around the time that I was first asked to write, right after Reb Eliashiv was mister, of how many Svarim are based almost solely upon the writings and the Pitzkei Halacha, mostly oral, Baal Peh, of Reb Eliashiv, and I came up with about 300 Svarim. There's a collection by Rabbi Feinhandler. His father was recently nifted, unfortunately. Rabbi Pesach Feinhandler was a yidid of mine. But the son in Eretz Yisrael also learned very much by Reb Eliashiv. And he compiled, and his list is only about 250. Mine is about 300. All these people that went to Reb Eliashiv daily, sometimes much more than daily, and then we can recite some of their names,
and their parnasa, but not so much money, but what they gained from him, which is what was passed on to Klal Yisrael, we all gained from it, is the Pisgei Halacha on a daily basis, sometimes the most tiny little details. For instance, Rav David Morgenstern, who was very close to Rav Yashu, wrote with a sefer about the writing of tefillin. And it's so excruciatingly minute in all the little details about the different types of stitches that you have to do, and the way that you close it, the way that you open it. Rav Yashu was the one that passed him on every single detail. And now that he's gone, okay, Yahweh and Yisrael will find somebody. But the sense of loss is very, very profound. So we're just going to start off a little bit the connection between Rav Yashu and the Yatsiv with a shmooz that Rav Chaim Shmulevitz gave. It's in the first volume of the Sichas Musar, where Rav Chaim Shmulevitz mentions that there's a halacha about the laying on Yom Kippur that you're supposed to try to cry over the death of the Bnei Aaron. It's a halacha, very rare type of halacha, because it's a place that mixes both halacha and emotions. You're supposed to try to cry, bring yourself to cry over the death of the Bnei Aaron on Yom Kippur when we lay that laying. And if you do, it's all sorts of good things that will come to you. So Rav Chaim Shmulevitz says, you know, first of all, they died thousands of years ago. We lay about it every year, and we talk about it. It's not a new story. How do you bring yourself to cry over the death of somebody or two people that died so long ago? And that's, of course, the connection to Rav Yashu, is that he lived a long time. I remember telling somebody that is not so religious yet, about the fact that the Jews are all in mourning, everybody is crying because of the death of this sage, this great rabbi. And somebody said, oh, was it a tragedy? Was it like, you know, 25 or 35 or somebody young? I said, no, you know, it was 102. The guy said, what's the big deal? You know, old rabbi died, you know, had a nice life, wrote some books, gave a lot of speeches, had a nice family. What's the big deal? What are people crying about? So by us, the crying is really of a different nature. We're crying over a loss that's constant. Like, did you ever hear the concept of the gift that keeps giving? Well, he was the gift to Klal Yisrael, the gift from Hashem, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us, and that he gave us with his tremendous adherence, his asmada, his diligence, his day and night learning, and his ability and willingness to give it over to Klal Yisrael. So Rav Chaim Shmulevitz says, what are we crying about, and why do we bring ourselves to cry? Because tzaddikim always grant their generation, and if they're on a very high level, all generations, the gift of who they are, the madrigas, the levels of who they were, that is constant. It's infinite and it's eternal. And if you start thinking about it, you analyze and you study, and you bring yourself to recognize the loss, then it brings you to tears. And our job tonight is not necessarily to cry over Rav Yashu. It's not necessarily that we're here, as I said, for a hesped, because I certainly don't feel qualified at all to give a hesped. But I'll tell you what he said to me. Okay, we'll start a little bit with some of the stories. I'm trying not to repeat anything that I've said, even in the 5,000. A different place than the 5,000, but I've written some of it and spoken some of it, so I'm going to tell you some new stuff. But I will tell you, I'm going to start off with one of those lines that are memorable to me, and I hope they'll be memorable to you. I come to Rav Yashu because of my Rebbe. My Rebbe, Zot Zotzain, is a cousin of Rav Yashu, Zatzal, not in the time of Chaim. And her grandmother was the first cousin of Rav Yashu, and we always used to get in. And that's how I got into Rav Yashu. I used to say, Chayisara's Enikul is the Chayisara's granddaughter are here. And then the doors would open up and we would get in. So the first time that I had to give my spiel, my introduction to Rav Yashu, so I had to give them the whole Masechta Yevamos. The man will certainly know what I'm talking about. All of the Yichus, it's not that close. You know, it's a cousin, and a cousin of a cousin, and a cousin of my marriage, so it's not that close. So I recited to Rav Yashu who I was in relation to him. So he looked at me, and Rabbi Yashiv, among other things, was very, very terse. Spoke very few words, but the words were very significant. So he says to me, Krasha Liyaitz. So I took that as a compliment. Close relative, Krasha Liyaitz. I'm now committed to testify about him. Then I realized it wasn't really such a great compliment. It means that my relationship with him was so far that I would be able to testify for him and about him. So then I wasn't so impressed with the compliment. But then I found out, after the whole story, that I was talking to his son about Rebels of his own time, and he said that Rebel Yashiv always used to say this in the recent years about new descendants of his that were brought. He used to bring him a new great-grandchild, great-great-grandchild, etc. So he used to say about the child, Kushal Yates. Because, they weren't that close. A great, we think of a grandchild, a great grandchild, but Rabbi Yashiv being the man of halacha that he was, that was all about halacha, Kashal Yates. Now, but there was one story. I'll tell you another somewhat embarrassing, but, funny story, so that we establish that this is not one of those hesedim where I'm asking you to cry. So, I brought my, at that time, I was still my youngest son, my Ben Zikunim, to Rabbi Yashiv for an upshare. Very nice, 3 years old, with the kid. So we prepared a little yarmulke, pair of tzitzis and, scissors, everything was like really good. But by the time we got into Rabbi Yashiv, it was a bit late, not this late at night, but maybe it was. It was certainly after days of Kachavim. And Rabbi Yashiv cut his hair and, gave him a little bracha. And then my relative handed me the tzitzis. And something said to me, this is like not right. So I said to Rabbi Yashiv, would the rabbi like to put the tzitzis on my sheet? He looks at me and says, Sistach Nach. It's at night. What are you doing putting tzitzis on the chair? And, that was like sort of like strike two. So like, I'm doing very well. So, now, the third strike, so your mother has struck out already, this is already, I'm telling you the truth. So, we came to Eretz Yisrael, and I had an appointment for Motzi Shabbos, when he doesn't usually see people, but after all, so I said, we get to go into Rebbe Yashiv. So, Motzi Shabbos, I get to go, and I'm going to spend quality time with Rebbe Yashiv. I have all my shilas, already, everything. So, the problem is, we're in the hotel, it's Motzi Shabbos, we got to go to Rebbe Yashiv. And I don't have what to make Abdullah with. Okay, so I say to the Rebbe, it's not such a big problem. I said after the Abdullah, we can get it to a kid, but so I'll make Abdullah later. Fine. We get it to Rebbe Yashiv, and everything's good. So Shalom Aleichem, I'm good to go, have a seat. And the Rebbe, Allah Shalom, bring down cake and cookies and a drink. Now I haven't made Abdullah yet, so I got a problem. So, I said, thank you very much, Rebbe Yashiv says, SFS. Now, the girl, I don't tell me SFS, you got SFS. I said, I didn't make Abdullah yet. She says, so what's the problem? And the rest of the group got all the Abdullah stuff. Now I've got to make Abdullah in front of the girl I don't. So like my hands are traveling already, The water, the wine is spilling over. I see Rabbaya, and not because of, the minute, just my hands are traveling. So Rabbi Yashiv was so cute, he was facing me. All of a sudden, he turns away into his Gemara, which is what he did all the time. But he did it as a kindness to me, because he was making me very, very nervous. So, I think I know how to make Abdullah. I've been making Abdullah for a couple of years by then. But to make Abdullah in front of Rabbi Yashiv is a very daunting thing. So that was, you can call it strike three, or just get out of the game. I'm not sure which it was. But, that was my introduction to Rabbi Yashiv. Over the years, I had the opportunity of going to him many, many times. Thank God we were able to get in easily and to see many things. And I'd like to tell you a little bit about it. First of all, now that he unfortunately has passed away, his sons and daughters and one of his daughters, who unfortunately has since passed away, is was, so it's very hard to be able to say was about her, Rebbe Leah Arbach, was the Rebbetzin of Rebbe Zriel Arbach, his son-in-law. And Rebbe Zriel is the son of Rebbe Shlomo Zalman Arbach Gatzal. So Rebbe Shlomo Zalman and Rebbe Yashiv were Mechatanim, very different in many ways, but very similar in the sense that they were both tremendous, tremendous Bali Halacha. So one of the cute stories about Rebbe Tuleya Arbach that I asked her about, she kind of giggled a little bit when I asked her, but she confirmed that it was true. Apparently, it happened in two different ways. You might have heard one of the stories, but I'm going to tell you the other story. So the story goes like this, that Rebbe Tuleya, again, the daughter of Rebbe Yashiv, the daughter-in-law of Rav Shlomo Zalman Arbach. Not there, right? So she went shopping for a blech. Now, there was a machlokes between Rav Shlomo Zalman and Rebbe Yashiv about if the blech has to cover the knobs or just the fire. I'm not going to go into, I'm not giving a shiur tonight, but the way that this story, and again, I asked her about this later, she kind of gave, yeah, basically what happened. So what happened was, she was going back and forth between the blech that covers the knobs, like Rebbe Yashiv held, her father, and the blech that didn't cover the knobs, like Rav Shlomo Zalman. She can't really decide which one to buy. And, you know, the storekeeper in Eretz Yisrael, I'm sure you all know Eretz Yisrael, the storekeeper, comes over and says, "Lady, what's the problem?" I'm translating, obviously, right? It was in Yiddish or in French. "Lady, what's the problem?" So she said, I don't really know what to do. I'm not sure if I should buy the one that my father likes or the one that my father-in-law likes. And he says to the lady, "What's your problem? Why don't you go ask the rabbi?" So that was Rebbe Tuleya. Imagine growing up in this kind of an environment of Kedusha, the Tahara. So I heard from Reb Israel, so Gazun Shtarzai, who's also today, I believe, one of the Gedolei Halskis, Manedo, a Yid that just lights up the room with his Hachispan in Reb Israel, son-in-law of Rebbe Yashiv. He knew Rebbe Yashiv for half a century, 50 years approximately, that he knew Rebbe Yashiv. So Rebbe Yashiv, in recent years, had come to stay by the Arbachs, with Israel and Leah, and he wasn't well. This was in his recent years. And Rebbe Israel, after spending a few weeks with Rebbe Yashiv in the house, started to tell people, I heard from him personally, "Noyin is his hasmon." Now, you know, he knew Rebbe Yashiv for many decades. And he himself is not exactly a Bachur. Now, Wednesday and night, I've never seen Rebbe Israel without a Gemara, without a Shulchan Aruch in front of him. And he's a big person. But watching Rebbe Yashiv seriously learning day and night, Yom V'Laila, even when he's sick, and he came there very often to recuperate and to convalesce, even Rebbe Israel Arbach, who grew up in a house of Asmaga, which Rav Shlomo Zalman said that he never saw anything like it in his life. So Rebbe Yashiv's Asmaga was L'mayim V'nateva. It was almost supernatural. But tonight we're talking about it. The Rav gave us the mandate of learning something that we can take home, that we can use. Can we be Rebbe Yashiv? Can we be that kind of matzmit? So I just want to tell you a very cute story. I brought a little show and tell. There are two volumes that were actually published when Rebbe Yashiv was alive, called Hashakta. Shakta is more or less the same thing as Masmid. It means a person that's very, very diligent about his learning. So, the Sfarim was put together by Rebbe Frati, who is a very big postdoc himself, especially in Yonei Tzroyim, agricultural shilas, was very close to Rebbe Yashiv for many, many years, right hand man. And he and another couple of people put this together. But they weren't going to do it totally without Rebbe Yashiv. It's a little bit odd. These biographies are usually written after somebody passes away. So one of them asked Rebbe Yashiv, "Is it okay if we write a few things about the Rav?" He said, "What do you want me to write about me? I'm nobody special. I'm just a kid that tries to sit and learn a little bit. I'm not a Rosh Hashiva. I wanted to write about the Gedolei." They said, "No, no, but we'd still like to write something." So he said, "Okay, if you tell the truth, and you write MS, and there's a Tavelas, people will gain something from it, then it's okay." He said, "By the way, what are you calling this thing?" They said, "We're calling it Ashakta." He said, "Shoyne Shtetas, it's already, you know, it's already not true." He didn't see himself as a Shakta, as a Maslid. He already said that the title is wrong. Because as far as he was concerned, Kiyem Chayenu V'Oyach Yomenu, that's what it's all about. So again, we have a problem imitating or emulating Rav Eliashiv. But what we can do, I think, I've been trying to do ever since he was Nifter, is to work on our Abba Sotera, because really that's where it came from. It wasn't that Rebbe Yashu decided that the right thing to do is to sit down and work on Torah. The right thing to do is to spend every minute. Yeah, for sure. But his avos haTorah, his love of Torah was such that, and one of the stories that, I don't know if we're going to tell all these stories tonight, there was somebody that interrupted him during his daily 5, 6, 7 hours in a row that he learned in a shul called the Oyel Sara shul, where he learned for 60 years or so, behind closed doors. You know, nobody, you know, nobody came in, and nobody interrupted him, but somebody one day interrupted him. It was very rare. And he said to the person later on, he said, you know, I just want you to know what you did. He didn't mean to make him feel bad, but he said, I just want you to understand what it means to me to be interrupted. He said, you came to me with something that was very important. Interrupting my learning is pikuach nefesh by me. It's a sakana. It puts my life in danger. And if we would get that sense about learning, or frankly, and I'm going to talk to the ladies for a moment, and the rest of us that maybe don't have the ability to learn day and night, if we would have that sense about our avodas Hashem, that to give up a moment of avodas Hashem, let's not call it necessarily only sitting by a gemara, but doing the will of the Almighty, doing what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants from us. And if that were taken away from us, well, how important would that be to us? If we would realize that that is Chas V'Shalom, a sakana for us, Rahman al-Utzlan could take our lives away, because that's the definition of our lives would be very, very different. Rav Yashu didn't go on vacations, didn't take time off. In fact, when he went on so-called vacation the earlier years, when he was a little bit in better shape, and he learned in Rebbe Zvi'el's house, in one of the places that he went on vacation, imagine Rebbe Zvi'el Harbach's tiny little apartment. So what was the vacation? He didn't give a shiur to Ferris Bachram for those couple of weeks that he was by Rebbe Israel. But he learned, instead of like 22 hours a day, probably 23 hours a day, or whatever the cheshbon was. Because that was vacation. What does vacation mean? You have more time to immerse yourself in Torah. Rebbe Yashu was famous, among other things. He had a very good sense of music. He had a very good ear for music. And in fact, one of the famous stories, some of the family members tell the story slightly differently, but the famous part of the story is that when he was a young man, and he enjoyed a good chazan, he enjoyed hearing the music of davening. Yosef Rosenblatt came to Yerushalayim on a trip. Nothing wrong, he was a good man. He was going to give a concert. Rebbe Yashu went out, he started walking towards the concert, and he turned around and went back. Somebody asked him afterwards, why didn't you go? He said, Chavzach Kishet. He said, I was embarrassed. Somebody said, embarrassed for who? Who's gonna criticize you? He said, from Zichalei. I was embarrassed for myself that I'm going to go hear a concert, a chazan singing, when I have the Shiras HaTayla. The end of the Torah, it says, the last bit of the Torah, number Tayyar, 613, is to write a Sefer Torah, and the wording that the Torah uses is Kitzvu Lachem as Hashira Hazos. Write this song. The Torah is a song. Rebbe Yashu, among other things, was well known. There's a video that can be seen that his grandson took, and I'm going to tell you about the video in a minute, because it's fascinating. He sang all night. From when he got up at 2 or 2:30 in the morning, and he sang that song of the Torah till the morning. It was a beautiful song. It was obvious that to him this was not a burden. It was not the oil of Torah, it was the Abbas of Torah. And that's something that maybe we can work on trying to access our own Abbas of Torah. To realize, Pikudei Hashem Yisharim Misam Helei, what the Torah ultimately is a great simcha. So when the grandchild wanted to make this video, he talked it over apparently with some of the members of the family. This is the way I heard it over, with Rav Moshe Eliashiv, Rav Yonah Eliashiv, Rav Avraham Eliashiv, and they all said, okay, you know, if people will be inspired by seeing the Tata, the Zayda, learning in the middle of the night, you know, you take pictures of the clock, and that you can see that in the video, it's 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the morning, Rav Moshe is learning away. Oh, by the way, 99 and a half years old. shining away, learning away, running away, knocking away. So the grandson that took the video said, you know, I'm a little worried because we're going to have to put on some big lights, you know, to be able to see the roof, to see the Zayda. He said, don't worry about it. He's not going to be able to see it. He's not going to notice it because when his head's in the Gemara, he doesn't notice anything. That's what it was. So, was Reb Eliashiv removed from people? Listen to this amazing story. If he was Nifter now, so his son Reb Avremel told over the Meiser that during the Six-Day War, before they went to the Miklat, before they went down into the Breslov, there was a bunker or a place where you could hide out from the bombs of the Six-Day War. So they were still in the house. And the bombs were falling all over the place. And everybody was trembling. The son of Reb Eliashiv tells over, his teeth were chattering. The Tata comes over to Reb Eliashiv. He says, Lomich Nizam Na Gutavar. Reb Eliashiv just had a chiddush in a rabba. And the bombs are flying, and the house is shaking, and the roof is starting to leak, and things are coming in. Reb Eliashiv saying, oh, Mishtikul Taiga, because Kihem Chayenu Ve'ayloch Yemenu. He was oblivious to everything that was happening. But listen to this amazing thing. After the Rebbetzin was Nifter, there was an old Almana, a widow Nebuch, that used to come to the Rebbetzin. And the Rebbetzin is well known in the middle of the night, so she used to make a cup of tea for the Rav right before he started learning. He had it, and then he learned the rest of the night. One night, for whatever reason, it was late, and he just didn't touch it because that was not in his Seder. His Seder was that, you know, you start learning and you learn all night from 2:30 a.m. It was 2:45 or whatever it was. That's it. You know, you can't interrupt the Tysus for that. So this Almana came knocking on the door very tentatively, very timidly, and nobody heard the knock except for Reb Eliashiv. Because to hear the knock of an Almana, to hear an Almana that needs something, that somehow appeals or attacks or directs his chesed neurons. It is heard by the chesed part of Reb Eliashiv. And even though he was learning, which he always was, that he heard. And he told his daughter to go to the door and to take care of, this was after the Rebbetzin was Nifter. The Rebbetzin used to take care of his mother. But after she was Nifter, his daughter went to the door because her father told her to. That he heard. And Reb Eliashiv always used to say over the fascinating bit of chesed that they said he could do. He said, Geldovich Nisha didn't have any money, and they lived in tremendous deprivation for many, many decades. His sons write over when they now tell the story of how they grew up. They had nothing in the house, sometimes barely a drink of water. Bread and water, not pasta and melon fresco. That's how they lived. But they were happy, by the way. But they had nothing. So Reb Eliashiv said, you know how I can do chesed? I can answer everybody's shaitas. So my Rebbe once said, there's a pasuk, Pia pasuk b'chachma, the lady should know it from Eishes Chayil, the men should know it from singing it, Eishes Chayil miyimza, Pia pasuk b'chachma, the tairas chesed al nishayna. What's tairas chesed? So the Gemara says in Sukkah that it's Taira Lulame. When you teach Taira, so that's Taira's Chesed. So my Rebbe, Rav Lutner Zatzal, once explained, it's not Taira and Chesed that happen to have bumped into each other. His Lashon is, Shinis Damu Leput Begecha. They happen to come together. It's when you have an integral Shidduch of Taira and Chesed. And how is that? That's what a person gives of himself. The Gros says that the way that you do, today we call it kiruv, that the way you bring other people closer to Taira is like that gadget that, you know, you pour wine into it and then it overflows and then all the little cups, you know, get some wine. I remember once I had the luxury of Shiva in my house for a visa, and he took a look, he says, what's the dust? You know, like, he was laughing at it, because, you know, we made it into a big deal for the grandchildren and the children, and he said, I never saw one of the things in my life, you know, it's not exactly a halach. But it fulfills the gross marshal of how you give over of yourself, that you fill yourself up with taiga, and then it overflows to others. That was Reb Eliashiv. Chaim Shmuel Levitt said in that shmooze, that the gadol, the tzaddik, not only overflows to his generation, but to all future generations. So Nadav and Avihu overflowed to all of us, and so did Rebbe Eliashib. So, the Imre Emes, the Ger Rebbe, was, you know, he was a very, very Litvisher Rebbe in a certain sense. He was a Yekisher Rebbe. The Imre Emes had a clock, and he lived by the clock, and every minute counted. So one day, the guy that used to wake him up also very early, almost as early as Rebbe Eliashib, but not quite that early. One day, the Ger Rebbe, the Imre Emes, was up very, very late at night. And the Gadda had a little bit of rachmanis, so he went to sleep another half an hour. But the Imre Emes jumped out of bed, and he said, like, what's with you? What happened? So he said, Rebbe, chagad rachmanis. I had a little bit of mercy on you, and I let you sleep. So the Ger Rebbe said something that I think applies very much to Rebbe Eliashib as well. The Imre Emes said, Vosad had sitting the dwech. Well, it's today after told yesterday. Just because I didn't sleep doesn't mean that today is not a new day. And by Rebbe Eliashib, every night, 2:30 in the morning approximately, sometimes somewhere a little bit later, between 2:30 and 3, he was up, and then the next entire cycle was an entire day of learning of Avodas Hashem. So, at the Levaya, those of you that know what happened, Rebbe Eliashib was next, the Levaya was at night, and there were no estates, but there were just a few things that Rav Zilberstein Zilberstein had for Pusha Leila, one of his sons-in-law, the famous Olenu Shabeah, he authored many, many others for him. So Rav Zilberstein just got up and he thanked the doctors, he thanked those people that took care of Rebbe Eliashib, and that was it. But by the time everybody came back from the Kfura, it was 2:30 a.m. And Rav Shmuel Orbach said, and right after that, took a look at the clock, Shmuel Orbach, the son of Rishon Zalman, another son, said, you know why? You know why 2:30? So that everybody would suddenly realize what is 2:30 in the morning. Most of us don't think 2:30 in the morning. 2:30 in the morning for Rebbe Eliashib was the start of a new day. The new day doesn't matter what was yesterday. The new day of Avodas Hashem, the new day of Asmata. That's another thing that we can learn from Rebbe Eliashib, is that every day you have to be mischazek, you have to have chadoshim la'bekarim. It's a new day. It's a new day of Avodas Hashem. We're coming up to a Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah is a new year. So the Svarim HaKadoshim bring, I read in the Pacha Gitzvah, talks about it also, that Shana comes from the word that is somehow or other like something that's done again. Mishnah is to be repeated. So Shana has a certain sense of repetition, and yet there's something about the new year, the fractious, that's new. So my Rebbe said that the Chiddush of Rosh Hashanah is that it's a cycle, but you can be mechadish in the cycle. You can have freshness and newness. There's a sense of hischachu ma'aseka, start fresh. And that's what we all have to do when it comes up to a Rosh Hashanah, is not to look at the past. And that's why many Mefarshim say on Rosh Hashanah, we don't dwell on the Chatayim. There's no real vidui. Very strange thing. We do tshuva on Rosh Hashanah. It's a day of tshuva. Most parts of Hasmini have to do tshuva on Rosh Hashanah. But all the trappings of vidui, of saying the confessional, are not there. There's no Hashanu, there's no Achet. Why? Because we don't really want to dwell on the past. It's new. The whole pshat of Rosh Hashanah is it's fresh, it's new. And by Rebbe Eliashib's Hatzal, we saw in Yiddish, it's called a frischkeit, a freshness. I mean, I saw him at, I think, 99. I don't think I saw when he was over 100, but I'm not sure. I'm trying to remember if I saw him when he was 100. But for sure at 99 and a half. And when he went back to his Gemara, it was with a pleasure, with a simcha sachayim. Wow! And like, what was there that he hadn't learned yet? Probably almost nothing. And again, me, who am I to be maspid? I'm not being maspid. But the people that I spoke to, especially since Rebbe Eliashib was nifter, told me that sometimes they went to him after months and months and sometimes years of preparing. They've worked on a sefer, for instance, with Shmuel Orbach himself, wrote a sefer in one of the most complicated areas of halacha called Olos, where we talk about Tumah and Tahara, and he worked on it for a long time. And he came to Rabbi Yashiv, who said, you know, I haven't learned this in a while, but let's discuss it. Packed and unpacked all of the chidushim of Rabbi Shmuel Orbach, like in a second, showed him everything that he had nothing left to say. And Rabbi Shmuel Orbach didn't want to publish the sefer. But his father, Rabbi Shlomo Zalman, was alive then. He went to Rabbi Shlomo Zalman and said, you know, I don't want to publish the sefer. Rabbi Yashiv already knew it all. So Rabbi Shlomo Zalman laughed. He says, listen, my kid, Rabbi Shmuel, if everybody refrained from publishing svar because Rabbi Yashiv knows it already, wouldn't be any svar left. Nobody would publish anything because Rabbi Yashiv knows it all. But Rabbi Yashiv was a repository of everything, and yet Chadash Labakar, that we mentioned, and the Chadash Ketubai, and the Choyei Biyamir Benefik Chadash, this whole concept of newness, by it every day it was new, it was fresh, it was so beautiful to see the tremendous simcha that he took in everything. I'm just going to skip a little bit in the interest of time. This went back by Rabbi Yashiv to childhood. When Rabbi Yashiv was a child and he arrived on the shores of Eretz Yisrael with his amazing family, the Lesha, you know, was the biggest makubal for hundreds of years. The Lesha Shreimachwam, we call him the Lesha, his grandfather. And by the way, Rabbi Yashiv learned with his grandfather. He only started at the very end, he never revealed that he knew Kabbalah. But apparently, just in the last couple of years, for instance, Rabbi Aleph Shneider of Gesund Schneidstein, who today was declared to be the new Manik Adar after Rabbi Yashiv was left, he's also a Zuck of the flood. So Rabbi Aleph once said something about, I didn't understand something in the Zayir HaKadosh, I'll have to ask Rabbi Yashiv. So people understood all of a sudden that Rabbi Yashiv knows Kabbalah as well. How could he not? He was one of those that wrote over the Lashem for his grandfather. So when Rabbi Yashiv was a young child, and they were going to Eretz Yisrael, it was by boat in those days, obviously, so they stopped off in Odessa. Odessa in those days was a fascinating city, a cosmopolitan city, had very interesting sights. What did Rabbi Yashiv, the child, do? I think he was 12 or 14 years old. He got off the boat, halfway to the nearest shul, he went inside, and that was it. He didn't come out of the shul until they had to get back on the boat. So he always had this tremendous avos ha'Torah. Undoubtedly, he got it from his father, the humble Rav. He got it from his grandfather, the Lesha. But he also got it from himself. Inside of himself, there was this tremendous avos. Rav Shmuel Orbach, when he was saying his hesped on Rabbi Yashiv, brought the following Gemara. I mentioned today's daf a little bit earlier. The daf in the Gemara, that's one of the Gimel Brachas, that says, a person that had das, that has understanding, it's as if the Beis HaMikdash was built in his day. So Rishon Arbach says, so what is this thing called das? He brings a grah. The grah says that das, I'm quoting from the grah, das ha-mispashe she'achofa va'abicho enom rab v'rosh el-mispashe v'chol ha-guf. I'm going to skip most of this in the interest of time, but what this means is that das is not just something intellectual. It's something that spills over into a mechus, into an essence of the human being. And that was Rabbi Yashiv. It wasn't just his brain that was holy. It wasn't just his intellect that had this tremendous kedusha for Tahara. His entire being was a vehicle for Taira and for Kavod Shamayim. And we're all lucky. We lived in the door of Rabbi Yashiv. Ashreinu. That's what we should think about today as we go into Rosh Hashanah. How could we be a little bit more like him? How can we try to have in our lives a little bit more Kedusha, a little bit more Tahara, a little bit more Hasmada? Not to be exactly like him, but to be somewhat like him and to try our best. I'll just quote you the last part of that beautiful hesped that Rav Shmuel said. There's a pasuk that says, "Leiv Rishayim Kimat." It's a pasuk in Mishlei. Perek Yud Pasuk Chav, Kapitel Yud Pasuk Chav. So what is this meaning, Leiv Rishon Kimak? So the Goyim, the Gros says that a Rasha, even if he has a little bit of inspiration, it'll last a little bit. For a moment, he's inspired, and then it's gone. But by a tzaddik, the tzaddik has something that has an effect on him, and it lasts a lifetime. Rabbi Yashiv is pretty well known now. He was not a chassid, but he revered the Ostrov Tzareba. He learned the Svarim. He had a picture of him in the sukkah, which I was there to see. Why the Ostrov Tzareba? Because when he was 14, the Ostrov Tzareba was nifter, and he went to a hasbid about the Ostrov Tzareba. And one of the maspidim, named the Ostrov Tzareba, and he never heard him directly, spoke about the Ostrov Tzareba's hatsmada. And he was very, very articulate, probably even very eloquent. And Rabbi Yashiv took for himself a lot of that inspiration, and it impelled him, it propelled him towards the great hatsmada of his life, which was unceasing, unending, no stop to his learning. And because of that, he spent an entire lifetime learning this Torah, promulgating this Torah, and telling everybody, look at that picture of the Ostrov Tzareba. Because by Rebbe Yashiv, a moment of inspiration was not for that second. It was for something that you worked on, and you borrowed from it all the time. And we spoke about before, the gift that keeps giving, that was Rebbe Yashiv. There's a Medrash Rabba, one of the Gedolim, I think it's Rebbe Ruchem Olshin, quoted in language when he was masked. By Moshe Rabbeinu, it says that even the Shemayim cried, and the Shemayim themselves, the heavens say, Olad Chosid Ben Arab. The Chosid Micha, but the Shemayim, the heavens themselves, say that. So, I believe that he brought, if I'm not mistaken now, the Mishnah Pirkei Avos. Remeir Haider, Kol Haisid B'Tar L'Shmo, Zoycha L'Dvarim Harbe. A person that learns Tar L'Shmo, he's Zoycha to Olad. Olay Haid, El Shekol Ha'olam Kulay Kedai Olay. So, I think it's Rabbi Ruchem Olshin that wanted to say this Kiddush from the Medrash Shmuel. The Medrash Shmuel says, how come this Kala Olam Kulay? Because a person that learns Torah Lishma, the entire world looks to him. Why was the world created? There's a Mishnah that says that we should all realize that the world was created for us, Yishuvim Yibra'i Olam, because if not, only made one other. He's to warn the Avis, the witnesses, in a capital crimes case where there was a possibility of executing somebody. Be careful, you know. Man was created all alone. So a good person that does mitzvahs, that does his best, that learns Torah, because Rabbi Yashiv took the curses that he had and he developed them into becoming the Rabbi Yashiv that he was. What's the message for us? Every one of us also has potential. I had to speak the other day at an event for children with learning disabilities, Down syndrome children, etc. I told over a very small vignette, an anecdote with the Chazon Ish. The Chazon Ish at the end of his life was very, very shacharedi, very weak. And he was in bed most of the time, even though of course he was learning, but he didn't get out of bed so easily. Later, and a Down syndrome person walked in and he stood up, completely stood up. Somebody said, you know, the other day a big gala walked in, the whole tzaddik walked in, Rosh Hashiva, you didn't stand up, how come you stood up for him? So he said, you know, the measure of a person is how much of a gap is there between the potential and the actuality. He said, this person who got a job, who has a smile on his face, who walks around and is a functional human being, that was a tremendous accomplishment for him. It wasn't easy. So I stood up because, look at that, he's a person who davens every day, puts on tefillin. For him, that was a tremendous accomplishment. He has very little gap between his potential and his actuality. Rabbi Yashiv took the potential, and it became probably as close as any human being in recent history has come to achieving his full potential. Yarn Dalai Lama Yishmaisu. Day and night learning. Abaki b'chol machmani ha-Torah. Knew everything in the Torah. Paskin for Klal Yisrael. Developed a family and an ongoing legacy that is unbelievable. So for Rabbi Yashiv, who not only had a little bit of potential, but a tremendous potential, the Shemayim themselves are crying over him. Avat chasid min ha-aretz. So we, of course, want to be able to do no less. And there's a time in the Be'al Yo that says that Thomas Chacham Shemesver Lehiyeh Tumurasa, a Thomas Chacham that died, and he didn't leave anybody exactly like him. Royalist Aneach Lehomei Alamin. So he cried forever and ever, Lehomei Alamin, for eternity. So I'm not the one that can make this judgment, but I heard in the last probably 6-7 weeks or so about Rabbi Yashiv that he was that person, there's nobody like Rabbi Yashiv. There are great people, his own family, great, great people, but there's nobody like him, and we still don't even begin to understand who he was. One little story, just so you get an idea. When Rabbi Yashiv was about 60, he had a heart attack, and the doctor literally coerced and forced him to start taking some time off, just a little bit of, you know, rest, relaxation, R&R, just a little bit. So you know what he started doing? I hope the ladies will forgive me for saying this. He started talking to the Rebbetzin a little bit. And the Rebbetzin told the children told us over at the Shiva, that the Rebbetzin said, they never schmoozed before, because there wasn't in his vocabulary, wasn't in his lexicon. But now that he was told he's not allowed to learn for a few minutes every day, so he said, well, now I'm afraid to schmooze with the Rebbetzin. So now we have that little bit of Sifas Kulin, like about Rabbi Yashiv Sifas Kulin, wow, whatever that was. But till then, it was only the few moments that were absolutely necessary, and the Rebbetzin was fine with that. Because when they got married, so somebody said to the Rebbetzin, as up the garnished, he had nothing to say in the beginning. And he was so shy on the so-called date, he didn't even talk. So they said to the Rebbetzin, you sure you want to marry this person? And she said, what do you mean? I'm marrying the Torah itself. I'm marrying the personification of the Torah. After all those years, the Rebbetzin had the Sefer Torah as her husband. And look what they produced besides the Torah, the beautiful family, children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, all Zerah, Merah, Hashem, all the holiest, beautiful children. Not children, they're all, and I know her, Gedali Yisrael, and the wives and relatives of Gedali Yisrael. But Rabbi Yashiv gave us all of this through his Amelus and through his Yigiyah. I just want to share with you, just as we close, Rabbi Yashiv did not learn from a Rebbe. He really was self-taught. A Rebbe used to call it, an autodidact. In New English, by the way. So he called it an autodidact, self-taught. So the question was, who really taught Rabbi Yashiv? And one of the Maspidim, also from Lakewood, said over from Rabbi Aaron Zatzal, that a person like that was taught by the Levayim Shalala himself. And my Rebbe, who revered Rabbi Yashiv tremendously, and very close at one time, said there's a pasuk that says like this, "Imtaitzi yakar mizaylel kefisiyeh." If you take out yakar, that which is precious, mizaylel from that which is cheap, that which is nothing. In other words, you teach people that don't know anything, and you bring them up, you uplift them, you energize them in Torah. You are like the mouth of Hashem. And that was Rabbi Yashiv. Rabbi Yashiv was able to learn almost directly from Hashem himself. One of the Yeshivas, the Yeshiva of Knesset Yecheskel, said in his Hesped at the Levayah, he mentioned this thing about the 2:30 clock that he saw, and he added that Kadosh Baruch Hu sends in every generation somebody that's greater than the generation. The Gemara calls it Shasol Necholdar Vidar. He takes a tzaddik for the Shama and he plants it in a certain generation. And since we reside in our generation to have a Rebbe Yashiv, then it certainly seems to me, at the very least, that we should try to continue to learn from him, from his Sfarim, and from who he was. There's so much that, I'm really troubled by, you know, having to limit it. But I just want to say something. You know, we're in a political season, as everybody knows, things happening in the world. There were great, famous, secular politicians that brought down the morality of entire countries. It can happen in the United States also. But I'm not going to get too political and mention it. And I ask it's the exact opposite. There are Gedolei Yisrael that by their very existence, they planted and implanted and nurtured tahara, purity, kedusha, sanctity, holiness in an entire generation. And that was Rebbe Yashin. The very, very fact that we were privileged to be there says something, hopefully, about all of us. Just going to maybe close with the following thought. There's a Gemara in Yuma that says that there was a fellow named Gavini Cruz. Gavini was an announcer. He used to announce things that are happening in the Beis HaMikdash. And he had such a loud voice apparently that he could be heard for 3 Persian miles, which is a lot of hour miles. And then there was another person that did something that could be heard for 4 miles. So a number of Gedolim write this. I'm not going to quote it from any one in particular, but a number of Gedolim write, and they asked the question, are we talking about guys with loud voices? Is that a Jewish advantage? Is that something to be rewarded? And they say as follows, I heard this from Shmuel Kamenevsky also, just to mention one name, that this means that a person that becomes excited about Avodas Hashem, all of a sudden is given kaiches that he himself physically couldn't have. When Dachas came back 10 years ago or so, maybe it was a little bit more than that, to do one doctor came from the United States, a non-Jew, to do surgery on Rebbe Yashin. Afterwards, he said it was the first time that he ever did surgery on somebody that old. And after that, Rebbe Yashin lived another 10, 12 years, but not some years of Havayas, Hakaydish, of Asmada, of uplifting Klali, so years of not sitting in a nursing home and shuffling, but of changing Klali, so. Where did this come from? It comes from the will and the yearning to make a difference. And that's really what I wanted to end with. The daughter of Paro extended her hand, as we all know, and it was amazed that she was able to reach the little Moshe Rabbeinu. It's all a function of what we want to do. When the Vilna Gaon, very famously, sometimes people used to bring over their children, and they used to say, become like the Vilna Gaon. The Vilna Gaon used to say, as the Vilna kennst du. It was a play on words of Vilna. If you want to, then you could be it. And that was Rebbe Yashin. Rebbe Yashin, all of his life, was a weak person physically. He was not well, lived till over 100 of productive, wonderful years, because that's what he wanted, was to be an Eved Hashem. And as we come towards Rosh Hashanah, we all want certain things from the Rebbeinu Shalom. Some people want Bana, Chaya, and Zayna. Some people want Shidduchim. Some people want Parnassah. Some people want good health. But if we turn it around, as Lakewood Mashgiach Satsal, he always used to say with Nasa Vatfogel, that these are days not to ask for what we want. These are days to ask for what's good for the Rebbeinu Shalom, Tavayochel. But while it's good for the Rebbeinu Shalom, it wouldn't be so gay if I was a little healthier. I could serve Hashem better. If I had a couple more bucks, I would be able to be a better Jew. If my children had Shidduchim, I would be happier. They would be happy. We'd be able to be a happier family. We'd be able to do Avodas Hashem. That's how you look at a Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah is for the Rebbeinu Shalom. And Rosh Hashanah always used to say that the 2 days, Midrei Zecharin, we're walking around in the palace of the king. When you're in the palace of the king, you can't be trivial, you can't be petty, you have to be great, you have to be expansive. That was Rebbe Yashin. He didn't look at himself, he looked at Klal Yisrael. What does Klal Yisrael mean? The children growing up knew that they were important to him. He loved them, he learned with them, but he had the greater needs of Klal Yisrael always in front of him. What does Klal Yisrael want for me? What does the Rebbe Yashin want for me? That's the way to go into Rosh Hashanah, thinking about what is good for the Rebbeinu Shalom, Kavayachol, for Kavod Shemayim, for Kiddush Shem Shemayim. And if we'll do that, then the bracha will bounce back to us also. We should also have a Rivas Yalla Mishan in Mirat Hashem, and all the brachas that HaKadosh Baruch Hu can give us, and will give us in Mirat Hashem, Chol Mishalos Libeinu L'Tayva, should be Zachar Mirat Hashem, all of us, to exceed in the Tayva, a good Kibbeh Shem.
I have a thank for the beautiful words, so we'll make a minute for Myra right now.
Thank you.